हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, continuing with Haridas Thakur's description of the 10 offenses, page 4. Other people claim that since Vishnu is all-pervading throughout the universe and is present in the demigods as well, one can worship Vishnu by worshipping all the demigods. But this is not the ruling in the scriptures. Rather, this type of activity is forbidden. By worshipping Vishnu, all other worship is perfected. Just as by giving water to the root of a tree, the branches become satisfied. By worshipping Vishnu exclusively, all worship is covered. This is the Vedic conclusion. But unfortunately, the fools reject this precept. Under the influence of Mayavadi philosophy, the living entities of Kali Yuga put Vishnu on the same level as the demigods. Because, as mentioned before, the Mayavad philosophy, you have those who are followers of Shankara, you know, that have that renunciation and that logic and everything like that. But basically, Mayavad is a catch-all for any philosophy, because they're all impersonal. Because the impersonal has its advantage that if God is everything and everything is God, therefore then you can do anything with anything, whatever you like. You can elevate anything you want or do anything you want. So all philosophies take shelter, bogus philosophies all take shelter of Mayavad. It's just natural. So you can say someone's a Mayavad, but it just means they're not Vaishnavas. Because basically that's what you're dealing with. In truth, however, the demigods give only limited result, whereas worship of Vishnu yields all results. If the materialists can understand this truth, they will take to Vishnu worship and achieve all results. Because you can only get a limited result by worshiping the demigod. It won't give you more result. Just like, let's take, for example, Hiranyakashipu. He worshipped a demigod and got benediction. And from that benediction, he was, you know, the most powerful person in the universe. But Prahlad Maharaj didn't bother with any of that. He just worshipped Vishnu. Who won in the end? Right? Yeah. So that's the thing is, the demigods are limited in what scope they can give. And it's dependent on you being actually qualified. Right? Yeah. How should a householder in the Varnashram system act? Generally, he should give up worrying about inferior obligations and simply worship Krishna. In other words, in all the samskaras from insemination to funeral rites, Krishna should be worshipped, using appropriate mantras from the Vedas. Right? So that's what Gopal Bhakti Goswami has given us. And we'll sometimes say we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, so here's the guy who chants Hare Krishna. And he's mentioning this is what you do. Right? Yes. You know, if you say Haridas Thakur, what does that bring to mind? You know? The one who's always absorbed, always chanting, right? The Namacharya. One should worship the Vaishnavas and Vishnu directly and worship the forefathers by giving them prasad from Vishnu. The worship of Krishna is the essential part of the Varnashram system. The four Varnas carry out life according to the rules of their particular caste, but do not worship Krishna, then they simply go to hell. Particularly, the grihastha must follow the rules of his varna in performing his worldly activities of raising family and relating with the rest of society. But at the same time, according to his means, he must worship Krishna. And he must respect and follow these rules as long as he has not come to the platform where the rules hamper his progress in worshiping Krishna. Right, so it says here, you know, that the rules hamper his progress in worshiping Krishna, not hamper his progress in whatever else he's interested in. Right? Hmm. This is the platform technically known as bhava. So if you're on the platform of bhava, then maybe they get in the way. But if you're not on the platform of bhava, then you can be quite confident that you can still follow the rules. And it's approved by Haridas Thakur. Right? Right? In that state, the jiva develops sadhana bhakti, in which the inspiration to perform devotional activities comes directly from the taste experienced by the pure jiva. This goal will eventually be achieved by the grihastha Vaishnava who accepts Vishnu as supreme. Right? So, whatever, he's talking this in relationship to rules. Right? So the most rules apply to grihasthas. Right? You have the whole Manu Samhita. Means the opening is telling how creation takes place and all that. And then the end is then talking about how you deal with rules and everything like that. So, you could say as half of that was probably about, yeah. Then you have a chapter that's on brahmacharis, and then a chapter on half on vanaprastha and half on sannyas, right? So that's two chapters. And then you have three chapters that tell about kings, right? Kings mm-hmm. or grihasthas,
yes.
Right? Then half a page on vaishyas and two shlokas on shudras. So the point is that out of this whole thing, it's the manu is the all those rules that are there are for grihasthas,
yes.
Right? Some general, you know, rules and etiquette and all that are explained during the brahmacharya. Some of those general things continue through, and everybody follows.
Yes.
But the rules are for grihasthas because they're dealing with the material energy.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So the point being made here is that, therefore, following this varnashram system and doing it in such a way to please Krishna, then this grihastha, then he becomes situated as a sadhaka and comes to the platform of bhava.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? So, by giving that example, you don't have to give the example of the others.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because all these rules are concerning grihasthas. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes. When reaching the platform of bhava, it is said that one may give up some rules, which. But the first symptom of bhava, as mentioned before, is he doesn't waste any time.
Mm. Yes. So he doesn't waste time saying that we don't have to follow the rules.
He doesn't waste any time. He's always involved in worship, so he cannot beat around the bush that I don't want to follow this rule. Because
Yeah. He's always busy. There is one other offense derived from not accepting Vishnu as the supreme, one without a second, or Advaya Tattva. Being the Advaya Tattva, Vishnu, by his inconceivable energies, possesses inherent name, form, and qualities which cannot be considered separate from him. To consider the name, etc., as different from the Lord is to consider the Lord and the name on a material level. This concept of duality is offensive. At the stage of Namabhas, one may hold this conception unconsciously from lack of knowledge or faith, but it is impossible to hold this conception at the stage of Prema. This anartha can be removed by the mercy of the bona fide guru, who will guide the practitioner in sadhana bhakti, so that the Shuddha Nam, the pure name, is revealed. Right? So you said before, we get all these things from the devotees. Even from scripture we're not getting, we're getting from devotees. That's why it's so important, we see, is that even in scripture, then things will be conversations. And especially then the Puranas and supporting literatures. Then much of the time you see is they use the story format. So you're hearing from, like now we're hearing from Haridas Thakur. Right? Does that make sense? But at the same time, this is compiled from Bhakti Vinod Thakur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're getting all that kind of association. So they're revealing about the Shutana. Otherwise, okay, he's established Varnashram, we have to do that, so let's discuss Varnashram. But that's not the discussion. The discussion is Shutana. So only the guru, he'll keep us on that track. Otherwise, we'll tend to, as soon as one secondary item comes in, we agree, okay, we're ready to go off. Like, no, it's about Shutabha. Oh, okay, like that. And then the next one, and then like this. Yes.
We are like small children.
Yes, yes. Just immediately anything that's shiny, you know, we're running off.
10 seconds is that anxious span.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Like that. From pious Indian families. 10 seconds. By material speculation, one can bring about this concept of duality in the Lord, and it can become a serious offense which is difficult to remove. Thus, in the case of the Mayavadis, holding to this concept is an anarta, right? This was one big Mayavadi from South, very famous Mayavadi. Then he was, you know, he was talking, I think, with Atmatattva, and they were discussing about the personal aspect, and he could see the superiority of it. And so they're not going to, so why don't you take it up? He says, I can't, I'm a Mayavadi. He said, and he was making the point that this offense, it doesn't go away. It takes millions of lifetimes to get rid of it. You know, it's so entrenched. Like that. So, therefore, one should be careful. Don't let this one come up. Thus, in the case of Mayavadis, holding on to this concept is an aparad. Right? One may start with that, you don't know, because you just don't know the importance of the name and everything like that. So you'd be careful sometimes if they throw too hard, those rocks can, how do you say? Shatter, yeah. And then little pieces go flying. So you have to be careful. If it's close, then that, but if it's any farther, then you can get pieces flying. Mayavadis claim that the impersonal Brahman is the supreme truth without variety, character or energies, without form or beauty, without change or activity, simply pure existence. For them, so what's the point of the existing? You know, unless something's happening. Right? Why is it here we take existence and do something with it and get an experience? And they say, so just that it's there, we don't really get the experience. So when we do something with it and get a result, then we have the experience, right? That's where the ananda is, right? But it's material. So now the idea is that simply with situation, then we will get ananda. But ananda comes from experience. Experience is result, results from activity. So in other words, how will you ever get any ananda out of Brahman?
Maybe ananda means only no suffering, yeah. No material problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then the it's negative. So why call it Brahmananda? Why not just call it, you know, Brahman nothingness? You know, you know what I'm saying? Because the Buddhists just call it nirvishesh. They just say nothingness. They don't talk about ananda. But the scriptures talk about it, so that means that there's an ananda there. And ananda comes from interaction.
Also, those, if they go beyond the material plane, because they are in that effulgence of Brahman, by being close to the Lord, that they have that feeling. That's the only ananda they have. Mm.
Yes, but it's the Atmaram. But the point is who gets there? We see the four Kumaras are there, and then so they can appreciate Brahman. So then when they come in contact with the Lord, then they can see that there's superior experience in Parabrahman. Because otherwise they know Brahman, but in Parabrahman. So then they become devotees.
So the Ananda which is mentioned in the scriptures about Brahmananda is because of their proximity with the,
yes, Lord, to the Lord,
experiencing,
yes,
some Ananda.
Yeah, so there's what the Mayavadis are talking about. It's just nirvishesh.
Mm.
You know, shunyavad. It's just nothingness.
Mm.
Yeah. Is it where they the, everything gets destroyed? No. Something with an N? In their nirvan.
Yeah, nirvan.
For them, the name and form of Vishnu are creations of Maya, the material energy of illusion. When a person can overcome illusion, then Vishnu simply merges into the impersonal Brahman, losing individual identity. This is all simply bad logic based on atheism. So they come up with this and try to do things, and if you find faults in it, then they try to come up with different solutions and all that. To claim that the supreme truth is without all conceivable transcendental energies or is unable to possess character is madness. There may be some confusion of what to call the supreme truth, Brahman or Vishnu, but in either case, the highest realization must be God with energies and personality. That is the Vedic conclusion. Right? Does that make sense? So you have God, energies, and personality. These three are always going to be there, right? Because the energies then is the impersonal aspect. You know, and then they can do so many things. And so then God doing things with them and managing them and all that, he does that. But the point is why is he doing that? Because he's a personality. Does that make sense? So the personality, that's Bhagavan. God, that's Paramatma. Energies, that's Brahman. So that's the point, is Brahman is energies. You know, that means he's the Lord with energies. But the point is they're impersonal because they're generic. So therefore, in that way, there's no qualities, because there's no material specific things. But the energies that transform, that make all the variety, that's there in Brahman. Just like Krishna has the impersonal features, energies have that impersonal feature. Does that make sense? You know, strength is an energy, but strength is impersonal. Then you say, you know, this person is strong, now it's personal.
Okay?
So. That is the Vedic conclusion. Thus, one must avoid the offense of thinking material that Vishnu and his name, form, etc. are different, and of thinking that other living entities, such as the demigods, have an existence separate from Vishnu. To summarize, whoever is solely devoted to Krishna simply worships Krishna and gives up all other worship. He does not criticize the demigods or the scriptures which support the worship of demigods, but respects the demigods as servants of Krishna. Some scriptures may establish demigods as supreme to establish belief in different categories of human beings, in order to raise them through regulation to the point of coming to faith in Krishna and Bhakti. Because if you accept that there is supreme above yourself, and by respecting them, worshiping them, following some kind of process that's connected to them, then you'll progress.
Mm-hmm.
That faith is a primary aspect, a principal aspect. It may be applied at a lower level, but it's a principal aspect. So now all you have to do is convince them of worshiping Krishna. Right? Krishna is supreme. Then his pleasure is supreme. Then gurus in that line, then who are you listening to? Those shastras connected to Krishna. That sadhana that's pleasing to Krishna. You understand? So that's why we don't criticize them, because they're meant for that. And when they say supreme, they simply mean within the context of that, what they're doing, their duties. Does that make sense? Like Shiva is supreme in the context of devastation.
Yes.
But he's not supreme in the way of maintenance or creation. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, because persons on that particular level don't see past that anyway. You know what I'm saying? That's how advertisement works. No one sees beyond what they want to believe. Right? So that's the whole thing.
And also, though the Supreme Lord has all the good aspects of the demigods, they don't want to worship Lord because It's like they cannot handle so much purity.
Yes.
Because he has to be impure, workable for me.
Yes. Yes.
Maharaji, I've heard not one time that worshipping Krishna and ignoring Shiva is not right. And then I've heard that you have to...
But what does that mean, ignoring Shiva?
Like, we have to worship Shiva as...
No, but see, is it you're not, if you're dealing with Krishna, how are you ignoring Shiva?
So I'm confused in this. I just
means that when we're dealing with Shiva, then we're going to respect Shiva. But if you're not dealing with him, by dealing with Krishna, you're already dealing with Shiva. Does that make sense? It's not that you have to go out of your way to establish worship of Shiva, but if you're going by and you bump into a Shiva temple, you're respectful.
And I consider Shiva as the biggest devotee of Krishna.
Yes. But the whole point is now in the Panchatattva, Advaitacharya is Sada Shiva. Right? Yeah, that's an accepted point. But he's also described as Mahavishnu. So that means if you're respecting Mahavishnu, that Shiva aspect's already included. And Mahavishnu is coming from Shankarshan. Right? Shankarshan's coming from Mahanarayan, Mahanarayan's coming from Balaram. Right, so let's say if we're talking about Vrindavan pastimes, do we consider Krishna and Balaram? Yeah. Okay, what if Lord Chaitanya's pastimes? Then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda? So where are we ignoring Shiva?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like that.
So Maharaj, the whole aspect of philosophy, the tattva, is there only to bring about this conclusion, like the understanding of the whole demigods here presented is to bring out the conclusion that you don't offend the Lord so that you can develop that love for the Lord by constantly.
Yes, yes. Because they're a part and parcel like this, but the point is it's just like, what would you say about someone who they really have utmost respect and care in that for the fingernail of your, you know, your little finger on your right hand. But you couldn't care less. That's demigod worship. But if you worship the person, that includes the little finger, you know, fingernail. You know? So that's the difficulty. So not seeing that it's all together. So Krishna means, so if they're saying, no, you have to separately, it's not enough to worship Krishna, but the point is Krishna is Shiva. You understand? So then they're making too much of a distinction, and that's the offense being brought out here. And then Krishna's not independent, or, you know, without Shiva. The point is we respect because of devotees. So by his grace, and then what's the point? Why worship Shiva? What's the point? What you'll get by worshiping Shiva. So that's the point. Then why saying, no, you have to worship, it's an offense. Well, why even bring it up? Because Shiva, what is he in control of?
Material
energy, but specifically what's, you know, because his wife kind of does the management there. But, so destruction, but?
Ghosts and...
But let's go back to sutra.
Mode of ignorance,
but then what's before ego. That ignorance? What is it a manifestation of?
Ego.
No. So in other words, the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, he's the one that's in control of that. So when you take that mood up, then you're under his control. So worshiping as a devotee, then the idea is you get rid of that idea, I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? With that, then, and he's a servant of Nityananda Prabhu, right? So then, by his Nityananda Prabhu's grace, you can give up material desire. And then in that position, then you can properly worship Lord Chaitanya. Right? So for us, we're worshiping Advaitacharya, there's no need of separate. Because you see, Prabhupada's here, we've always been saying Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. We're always respectful, we're always dealing, but did you ever see any of our temples that have a Shiva temple established? No. Does that make sense? So there's no need. somebody has, that's fine. We're not going to complain as long as they understand the philosophy properly. But if it's propagated, no, you have to, and it's a defense, and this becomes their platform of uniqueness and specialness and all that. As we mentioned before, you want to take up that crusade and go to Jerusalem. That's where you do crusades. In the Krishna Consciousness Movement, it's about going back to Godhead. Right? Does that make sense? You know, at Jagannath Mandir, but he was there. So we worship, we take care. You know, Maya Devi's there. That's where her spot where she worshipped Lord Titania. So we have a temple that's right there, but nowhere else, because he's already included. Every altar has a Panchatattva picture on it. That means he's already there. Right?
No, it is why in Kali Yuga the main deity is Panchatattva.
Yeah. Because then all the energies are there. All the Purushas, all the energies, all the moods. Yeah. Thus, one must avoid the offense of thinking materially that Vishnu's name, form, etc. are different, and of thinking that other living entities, such as the demigods, have an existence separate from Vishnu. Right? So in other words, Krishna's name are non-different, and the potencies that make the demigods function are Krishna. So they're not independent, and Krishna and his name are independent. And they're the independent same Lord. Krishna's non-dual. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the thing. Where we'll say he's non-dual, where he's one, that's where the Maya bodies will say is separate.
Yes.
Right? And where we say separate, you know, it means the energies and the material manifestation and that's where the Maya bodies will say it's all the same. Yeah. So that's the point. Is they yeah. We did that. Summarize.
Within that, we are the true Vaishnava.
Okay. The true Vaishnava will see the function of the demigods and their respective scriptures in proper perspective. Criticism of Krishna's servants, the demigods, is also offensive. Right? So that's why we don't criticize Shiva and the demigods. We have respect for him because he's a great devotee. All of them will be deal with nicely, and especially him. But there's no need to separately worship. Since it's obligatory for the householder to worship the demigods according to his caste, he will worship the demigods and forefathers by offering them the remnants from their Lord Krishna. Similarly, when the devotee sees the murti of a demigod, he will pay respects to the demigod, seeing the demigod as a Vaishnava. Right? Because all demigods, they all have to be devotees. The 33 million, they're not given positions because they're not devotees. They're given positions because they are devotees. If they're not devotees and they're powerful, then they're on the lower planets. Right? That's the demons. Right? They're powerful, but it's about not about Krishna.
And especially Maya, the primordial demigods are elevated devotees also, right?
Yeah, they're more. Because generally no one's... Very few are worshipping all the demigods. They're just worshipping the main ones.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so Indra, Agni... Dharmaraj,
right.
Stanu, Varuna, Vayu, Kuvera. Who's in the northeast?
Yeah.
Oh, Shiva. Yeah, Shiva. These are the ones they're doing. Or then Shaktis, like that. But, you know, so no one's going out that. So they're even more in the proper. However, the devotee will not accept the prasad remnants of an offering that a Mayavadi has made to Vishnu, because the Mayavadi's chanting and worship are both offensive, and the Lord never accepts his offering. So those materialists, they're worshipping Vishnu, then we won't accept that prasad. And their worship of the demigods, we won't accept either. Like that. So when they come and you come and they give you like that, yes, nice, be very nice, respectful and all that, and then, you know, when you go somewhere else, then you can distribute. Like that too.
To the trees, no?
Yeah, trees, the dogs, somebody who will appreciate.
Maharaj?
Huh?
In Jagannath Mandir, when they offer Jagannath Bhoga, then they take it to Shiva. Is it okay to take that as Mahaprasad?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be? It means who's making the offering? Do we have Mayavadis up there making the offering? No? Okay. So that's the first symptom that maybe it's okay. Right? And point is, as we discussed before, is because he's the you know, best of Vaishnavas, therefore then he becomes Mahaprasad. Like that. And Puri, then all the offerings means they go to Jagannath, and after that, before coming out, they go to Bimala Devi. Right? Because Shiva got some prasad and she didn't, so then she did austerity so that she'll get. Yeah. Otherwise, the others all ate everything and left nothing for her, right? So she gets first. That makes sense? So is that the difficulty is we'll go all or nothing. It's a matter of, no, we just go how much is there. It's there, then it's fine. But otherwise, we don't need to make a separate effort. So. Also, to accept offerings made directly to the demigods is an offense to Vishnu and obstructs the path of pure devotional service. Right? Because, as you said, even the householder, if he's obligated to worship the demigods because of his caste, their family tradition in that, because it's not necessarily they're on their own, they're with the whole rest of the family. So they're worshiping, but he'll always offer everything to Vishnu, then offer it to the demigod. Right? And so they're devotees, and then it works fine. But if you have those who just directly worship the demigods, it's an offense because you're worshiping the demigod because of their potency. That potency is not theirs. You know, it's like worshiping a minister as the government. But he's not. It's only because of the government he has power. Like that. But by worshiping Krishna, the real devotee will give the demigods the Lord's prasad out of respect. Right? You've worshipped Krishna and the demigods are there, then they'll get also, because they're devotees and they're seniors, so you'll always respect them. Such worship and receiving such prasad is not offensive. In this way, the devotee avoids the second offense in chanting the name, and by continuing the process correctly, he achieves love of God. Right? We wouldn't have necessarily caught this aspect if by accident one should happen to turn from accepting Vishnu as supreme, one should be repentant and take shelter of Vishnu and be careful not to commit the offense again. By remembering Krishna, by remembering his name and chanting his name, the offense will disappear. According to the Vedic literature, there is no prayaschitta, reformatory process or atonement more effective than this. Right? So that's it says according to Vedic literature. That means, you know, all Vedic literature. I mean, Manu, it specifically says this. Means this whole idea of atonement is only because people are materialistic and they think without a materialistic punishment, nothing happened. That's the reason it's there. So it's not that actually purifies the living entity. It's because everyone thinks it will. Yes. Yes. So right there in Manu. His point is, chanting the Lord's name, you know, and that's what removes all sin. And these other things, that's just for political correctness. So this thing of political correctness has always been there. I think it's a new thing again also. No, it's already mentioned in Manu. Right? But it's specifically mentioned, it's for the common person. It's not for devotees. As we see, as the scriptures never supports that. Sixth canto is all about that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. It's so therefore there is no higher price chitta. Remembering the name, chanting the name, and remembering Krishna, remembering his name and chanting his name, the offense will disappear. And the other things will never make it go away. Because this will get rid of the seeds, right? Kutaj, you have kutaj, you have four stages of sin. So kutaj means that you have that propensity. You may not have acted on it, but it's there, it's just waiting. And if the opportunity comes up, then you will take the opportunity. So taking the opportunity, that sprouts a seed, which then grows and then gives you the results, the fruit. Right? And so that's how it's going on. So that's that cycle that goes on there. Then the second area, you know, because you have to have three areas for this to work. The second area is just there's this stockpile of seeds. Right? Because it's only based on those seeds that you can have this kutaj, or this desire to sprout a seed. There's no seed, how can you sprout it? So all your material desires, they're all there on their own, whether you're doing something with them or not. That because they're there, then there's kutaj in which you can appreciate the opportunity to, you know, apply one of those seeds. Right? And then the third aspect that's regard, the basis of the whole thing is ignorance. Because we're ignorant of our relationship with Krishna. So if we see our relationship with Krishna, we're servant of Krishna. That focus, that will get rid of these seeds. You get rid of the seeds, then where's the karma? Right? Karma can't function without seeds. Right? You can't get a plant to grow and give the results if it won't grow. Or, you know, this is... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, therefore, chanting and surrender to Krishna is the only thing that can get rid of the ignorance, that gets rid of the seeds, that therefore karma doesn't function. But to think that within karma itself we're going to do something and that's going to correct everything, leave the seeds, leave the ignorance, and think now we've done something so spiritual, then that's not understanding the philosophy at all.
Maharaj, in that case, since it is this Payachita idea is so much practice, I can say like that.
It's practice.
So we need a lot of faith in the Veda.
Yes.
Well, that, to come to heart.
Yes, but we see before that faith was there, no one worried about Payachita. But once you introduce political correctness, it's based on then you have to have Payachita. Because what's political correctness? What gets good results? What doesn't? But what results? Material results, social results, economic results. And so then that requires in economics, then you have to have justice. Because the point is, if someone does something wrong according to this social system of political correctness, then that means then I won't get my benefit. Therefore, someone should suffer for that. We have to correct this. Right? So it goes back to that justice is one of the inherent qualities of the soul. But justice means it's about Krishna. Mm-hmm. Things are being just means it's done for Krishna. Unjust means it's not done for Krishna. That's why it says that the definition of piety, real piety, is when it's done for Krishna, it's actual piety. When it's not done for Krishna, it's impiety. So that's actually the real application of the sense of justice. Because it's selfless. It's for Krishna. But where the thing is, it's about material piety and all that, that's for ourselves. You know what I'm saying? And so then, yeah. Because you have to be broad-minded to accept that someone's done something and now they can just by chanting then be purified. You know, we want to see something. No, because that bothers me, because that makes me insecure, because it's an area that I want to get material benefit from. So therefore, then they must be punished, right? Because they're the cause of my sufferings. They're the cause of it. So that's the difficulty, is that we have to have faith, and then it works. Then you have nice relationships, that people make mistakes, you help and you move forward. But if someone makes a mistake and then they have to be, you know, how you say, destroyed, then who's going to have a deep relationship with anybody? Who's going to actually try to be open and, you know, didati prati grinati guhya makati bichati bhunte bojayate? They won't do it. Because the wrong thing said to the wrong person, they'll destroy you. Because they think in mundane terms. So that's why we have to be very, very careful about this. There is no other prayaschitta. So, even if one turns against the Lord and all, the only way is to turn back and take up the process. Right? And if that works on the transcendental platform, why wouldn't it work on the material, which is a reflection? You can say, okay, for spiritual thing, that's all right, but this is, you know, material. We want, you know, we want justice here. Then no, it won't work. You know, how well did it work out, how you say, they wanted justice, they got rid of Louis, and then what happened? You know, was it so prosperous than that immediately, or was there just immediately war and fighting and everything like that, and trying to take over Europe and all that? And you know, so then, because it was so great, then why is it that you know, our man Flint ended up on Corsica, you know, how you say, sipping on horse urine, if it was so great? No, so that's the whole point, is it doesn't work out. You know, they wanted justice, they got rid of the Tsar, and then they have 70 years of not having anything. Right? You know, it's just the way it works. So this thing of justice, the point is it's connected. It's within the cycle. We're thinking this, now it's done. No, you've just done that stuff. Now it comes back around to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes back around to you, now you then it go from you goes back around to the other, and it just keeps going. So there's no end to that cycle. So justice means it's brought into line with actually pleasing to Krishna. So that means by doing something pleasing to Krishna. Right? You give up what you should not be doing, because that's what it said. You give that up. And then you are committed to serving Krishna. So this idea that there's another activity and that makes everything okay, then that means that we think that, you know, our so-called morality is actually stronger than bhakti. Because without this, then bhakti can't happen. Somebody said, yeah, so it's all the same kind of category. So that Krishna supreme, his chanting, his processes, what he gives, the scriptures, that's supreme. And so we have to see everything else in relationship to how they are expanding from Krishna's parts and parcels, and how he's in control. Okay. According to Vedic literature, there is no prayaschitta, reformatory process, or atonement more effective than this. This is because the Lord is an ocean of mercy and an ocean of forgiveness. Right? Similarly, the devotee also forgives past faults. Right? Because the Lord is like that, the devotees forgive. That's how it works. Right? Wow. Hari Das concluded, one should avoid association with those who worship demigods as supreme and rather worship the Vaishnavas who take Krishna as the supreme. In this way, one can avoid the second offense. So move away from those who have these materialistic inclinations towards seeing the Lord and his energies as separate, and worship those energies. And we take up the worship of the devotees. Right? And those Vaishnavas take Krishna as the supreme. Okay. Disregarding guru. Right? Because it means that you have an offense as a way to avoid it.
Yes.
So then this is the method. 3. Disregarding guru. Having wandered from one body to another in 8,400,000 species of life, through unintentional pious activity, the jiva attains a human body. The human body is a rare opportunity because only in this form can the living entity perform devotional service properly. But in the others, you can't do so much. Right? You know, let's say as a dog, okay, you can eat prasad. But how much can you eat? You know, and how much of the day? So it's not constant. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. As a demigod, one has the tendency to enjoy, and as a lower animal, one has no capacity for knowledge. But in the human form, the living entity can progress back to his constitutional position with Krishna. Right? See, so the demigod has the tendency to enjoy. What is that position? Piety. So if we put so much focus on piety, that will make the devotional service go very nicely. If that's the main thing, then the problem is we'll get distracted by the facilities of that piety. Is that, yeah, because if you get them, then you have to maintain them, right? You don't have them, you work for them. You have them, you have to maintain them. So then you get distracted. Therefore, if one does not take care to attain Krishna in this temporary body, one will die and obtain some other body, losing the opportunity to escape from the material prison. The intelligent person, having attained a human birth in this world, will take shelter of a spiritual master who will act as a captain to guide the jiva over the ocean of material nature with the instructions of bhakti yoga. This is the importance of guru. And so this, we saw before, the scriptures say you can't figure it out from the scriptures yourself. You have to approach guru. Right, so that's from the, what was that, Katha Upanishad? One who is a grihastha should accept a guru but remain in his duties of varnashrama. If a brahmana is a Krishna devotee, he can serve as a guru for the varnas. But if there is no suitable person of Brahmin birth, one can receive initiation from a guru of another varna. Right? So in other words, the natural thing is if you have qualified people from Brahminical backgrounds that can perform these things very nicely, then they would naturally do these things. But if they're not available, then others can do as long as they're Vaishnavas. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's just natural, because the qualities they do, the activities they do, everything, it's just natural you're going to see they're in a superior position. Right? Means Brahmins are superior to everybody, so therefore everybody will surrender. And if they are a Brahmin, then they can only surrender to a Brahmin also. Right? Yeah. So just taking into consideration that aspect. Of course, when you come from Alecha and Yavanas, you don't have any of these kind of concepts, so it works fine anyway, because, you know, where are the Brahmins? Right? You know. If there is a choice, the grihastha should choose a bona fide guru of higher caste. But in any case, the main qualification by which to judge who is suitable bona fide guru is how much the guru knows about Krishna. It means that you're going to accept someone as a guru is based on they know Krishna or not. Yes.
Here, the aspect, given that if there is a choice, one may choose from higher caste, is mainly because they naturally have more time to give. Because
yes,
the occupation
is the occupation gives, but it's also is that yourself, it's this naturally the idea of someone superior to you, because on the material spiritual platform, then you're looking and seeing that they're there. But on the material platform, they're also more, it's always a help. Because if one is somehow or another not so Krishna conscious, then that helps. Right? And you also have the aspect is that when you're talking about grihastha here, we're talking about the whole community. And then you don't want others in the community, you know, the bigger family or, you know, the broader, all the relatives and all that, making offense against the guru because of the lower nature. So if there's an opportunity, the point is if there's a choice, then you would pick that because it'll just make everything work nicely. Because in other words, you have bona fide gurus from every status, then you pick whatever's the highest because that will work. But if there's but someone is qualified that they have that advanced position of knowing about Krishna, then they're accepted despite the position and everybody else can go jump. You know what I'm saying? So we don't have to deal with all that social thing, so for us it doesn't matter so much. But for those who are backgrounds that do, because with time we will start to catch those who are doing all these things, are pious, are nice, are, you know, not all of us around the edges of society, right? Like that, the ones that kind of fell off the edge.
The Prabhupada caught it from the reverse angle, that more than a Brahmana, people value Western.
Yes, so then that works. Yeah, that's the whole thing, is that I've seen it. Go to a preaching program with an Indian, and myself, they'll never ask me about the background, this and that. They'll just up at the Indian guy, they'll grill him over what his background is. You know? Till they know where he fits and everything. And then if it's good, you know, like I remember there's somebody doing that with Dayaram Prabhu. You know, because he's from, you know, Gaur Saraswat Brahmins there. And within that barge, Vaishakha, so that's the highest you get. And as soon as it, wow, it's just like the whole mood changed, everything stepped back, everything, everything just starts to work now, you know, like that. So because of that, that's why. So we're still kind of on the edges, but as we get into that and people are still practicing and doing all these things, you're going to have people who are practicing the Vedic but still have the materialistic. We're used to it, they're materialistic, they're not Vedic. You know, because in the West, you know, they're not devotees and they're not Vedic. And then they become devotees. And still not Vedic. but over here you have people, they're Vedic, not devotees, but then you can make them, they're Vedic and devotees. about that. Is that something?
It's true also in a sense, like if the Indians see a Western became Krishna devotee, it's obvious for them there is that. It has to be obvious they're a real devotee.
Yes, you never know. He also knows when we were going like in South and all that, and going to the temples and trying to get things done and the curriculum work, then we go with Atmatattva Guru, because he's from a Brahmin family, and, you know, a proper Brahmin, you know, very good Brahmin family. Then, you know, a few little discussions, and then the doors open. While others, then, you know, we saw that, you know, how you say, Guru Vaira was quite open and everything like that, but then, you know, some individuals from particular backgrounds went down there and acted according to their particular inherent conditioned nature, and the doors have closed. So now there's many temples that Achyutananda, I think Jashodananda Maharajas, they went around south to all the temples and went and discussed philosophy to show that we're bona fide. And basically, except for Puri, all the temples opened. But now many of them have closed because of the behavior of individuals. You know, it's not that you go there and deal, it'll work, but still it's not straightforward like before. So you do have that aspect. We're talking Vaishnavas here. You know, so that's why then Haridas Thakur is mentioning this, because one's still conditioned, these things still matter. You know, if you're not from a background of that at all, you never even consider it. But as we preach, there'll be more and more people that are from these backgrounds. So if it's considered, it's good. But the point comes is, as Lord Chaitanya said, someone who knows Krishna, they're guru. Right, so the point is to be guru, that's also the other thing, is that the neophyte aspect. To be guru, we think it means diksha guru. What do you mean siksha guru? Right, siksha is the whole point of the process. Like that, because you hear the instruction, you're not surrendering, but you take initiation, now you'll follow. Right? But it's supposed to be you're respecting Vaishnavas. So, and that point is because of the instruction. So, by hearing instruction, you do. So, all those who have that qualification that is recommended, they could be the Diksha Gurus, and everybody else can be Siksha Gurus. And the whole thing works very nicely.
You see that in our Acharya, like Ramanujacharya, he already had Siksha Gurus, Kanchipurna, from a lower caste.
Yeah, right, you see it's like that. Haridas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya, you know, is taking instruction from Haridas Thakur. Here, you know, that's the whole pastime. You know, so then, you know, or Lord Chaitanya went, that one Brahmin, can't remember, it was when he was going through, I think, Jarikanda and somewhere there, he met. And then the Brahmin mentioned that, that he's not very qualified and all that, because being a Brahmin, in the area where he is, you don't have all kinds of high-class people. So therefore, he's a Brahmin for, you know, kind of the general, you know, so the Vaishya community and things like that, instead of, you know, for the Brahmins. And so therefore, he would be reluctant to invite Lord Chaitanya over to his house for a meal. But in the discussion, then it's found out that Madhavendra Puri went to his house.
In Mathura.
I always thought it was Jarkhand. Mathura. And so therefore, then Lord Chaitanya said, well, he went, and I'm going. Right, so you have this point is that it doesn't matter. It's only on the material consideration we'll look at it. But the whole point is we don't have faith in it. So the mistake is that, okay, this will make things socially work better, but we have faith in it. That's where the problem comes. That we're smart and do things this way, like you're going to a program and it requires a certain kind of mentality, you choose those devotees which have that mentality and they'll go to that program. You use your intelligence. But to think is, no, it's because of that intelligence. That's why it works. Then, no, it's because of bhakti. That's why it works. Is that clear? Good? He may be a Brahmin or Shudra, householder or sannyasi, but this makes no difference in the Guru's ability to deliver the jiva. Right? So ultimately, that's the point. This should be the main consideration in choosing a Guru. If one desires to progress to pure attraction for Krishna. In other words, if there's a qualified guru of high caste, there's no necessity of seeking a guru of a lower caste. But if the high caste guru is not qualified as a Krishna bhakta, one should not take diksha from him on the basis of his high caste alone. Rather, one should take a qualified guru of a lower caste. The qualification of knowing Krishna and being a devotee of Krishna is the important consideration. Right? And we don't hear that Lord Chaitanya is going, wait a minute here, like that. No.
Yes, but...
Yeah, he's not. Guru may be of two types, one who gives diksha with mantra and one who gives spiritual instruction. They should be considered equal in importance by one who wants to advance quickly. Person... Oh, this is the third one, right? Huh, yes. They should be considered equal in importance by one who wants to advance quickly. If you don't want to advance quickly, just think that the Diksha Guru is important and the Siksha Gurus aren't. And then you won't advance quickly. Don't worry. Like that. You will advance, but more slowly. Like that. A person can accept only one Diksha Guru, but may have many Siksha Gurus who give Sambandha Gyan. The Sambandha Gyan or teachers are handing down in a Sampradaya from the founder Acharya of the Sampradaya. These original teachings and the founder Acharya of the Sampradaya should be worshipped with all respect. One should be loyal to his conclusions and instructions, not taking teachings from others. Means from that founder Acharya. One should take as a Siksha Guru only a person who is following faithfully the teachings of that founder Acharya. Right? I think in the Sanskrit he uses the Adi Guru. Like that. So it's the same. To take initiation or teachings from a Mayavadi is useless.
Right. Huh. It's so clear in one sentence, though.
Yeah, no, that means all this stuff where we talk about Adi Guru and then the Siksha and Diksha being on equal level, he also talked about the preachers.
Yeah.
These three levels, this is taken from this section of this book by Haridas Thakur. Okay. Thus, Guru, whether Siksha or Diksha, must be a servant of Krishna and an associate of the Lord eternally in Vrindavan, who has been especially empowered by Krishna. One should serve the Guru with great devotion, knowing him to be directly empowered by Krishna, the dearmost servant of Krishna, and one's own eternal spiritual guide. By such sincere service to the Guru, one can cross over the material ocean. That's why you have the words Shakshadhadi Twaina Samasta Shastra. What's it? The third, fourth, the fifth one about Radha Krishna. Shri Radhika Madhava Yorapada Madhurya Lila Guna Rupa Nam Nam. Then the next one, Nikunjayun or Radhikali. So that they're there. Point is whether one has realized that position and functioning in that, or one is serving, you know, Krishna and all that, and so that's just a matter of time. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is they're fixed in that and they're more advanced than you. Just like, let's say you're going to school and you're in the first year in college. Right? Now, is there any problem taking tutorship from someone in the second year? No. But you could say, but they're not the professor and this and that, and they're not, you know. Point is, but it's in line with the professor. So therefore, the effect will be the same. That's important to understand. Now, if you can get someone who is on that platform, then great. Right? But, you know, yes. By such sincere service to the Guru, one can cross over the material ocean. Consequently, if one disobeys or disrespects the Guru, that is offensive. Okay. And will block one's progress in bhakti. As in the case of showing proper respect and devotion to the sadhu and to Krishna. Similarly, by properly serving the Guru and chanting the holy name, one can get quick success, right? So the two go together. Having firm faith in the Guru, one can, by the strength of the pure name, attain the goal of prema, right? So you have faith in Guru and Krishna, then everything becomes revealed. But if one doesn't, you know, especially if you disrespect and disobey the Guru, then... So if you don't respect Krishna, there's a good chance you're not going to respect Guru. Right? Like that. So, you know, it just works.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.